welcome to your Friday postgame. I'm your host, Malcolm Fletcher. With me, yes, we got three amigos to get today. Dave Kohler.
First string.
Steve-O, the first string. I'm not sure why. I think Bart was playing Hawaiian music to confuse you into thinking that the image behind me is of island paradise, when in fact it's an island hellhole. Specifically, you know where it was, what it is, right?
It's Alcatraz, my favorite tourist destination in San Francisco.
Alcatraz is very strange. It's an unusual place to visit. The reason it's up today as our backdrop is because today is the 48th, or not today, but the 20th. November 20th is the 48th anniversary of what was known as the occupation of Alcatraz. I don't know if you guys know about this, when some Native Americans, they landed on Alcatraz and occupied it for like 18 months or something, because they felt it was Native American land. There was a treaty, I forgot what it was, treaty I have written down somewhere, there was a treaty with the federal government where lands that the government took from Native Americans, and then if they fell into disuse or they were no longer being used for whatever their initial purpose was, were supposed to revert back to the Native Americans. And so these activists moved in and said, we want you to honor that treaty. They were eventually, over a year and a half later, forcibly removed after, I think, a 13-year-old girl died of falling off of a cliff, was part of the occupying group. And it was not successful. Obviously, Native Americans do not control Alcatraz. It's still a federal land, or California. I don't know where it is. But it's not controlled by Native Americans. But a number of people point to that experience, that occupation, as the forebearer or the genesis of the movement for Native American rights, which has ramifications and echoes through today. With we have Bear's Ear, right? Bear's Ear, and of course the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. So I thought I would share that with you if you want to find out more.
One of the leaders of that movement passed away a few weeks ago, but
is there an obituary for it?
There is, but not on this show.
Yeah. if only we had thought.
I read about it. I didn't feel that I needed. There's nothing that I wanted to say about it.
I will say, if you have a chance to go to San Francisco, you have to visit Alcatraz. I think it's a great, great place to visit. You have to obviously take a ferry boat over there. You learn all about the island. I will caution you, it doesn't matter what time of year it is. I was there in July. It is frigid cold.
Yeah.
It's unbearably cold. I was in a t-shirt and jeans, and it was unbearable. So as soon as I got off the island, I bought one of those cheap tourist jackets that say San Francisco.
That's why San Francisco is so has so much money, is because of all the tourists who come in the summer and don't bring winter clothes, and then they have to buy them there.
Yes.
I think that's what keeps the local economy afloat.
But it's a beautiful facility. It's a weird way to say that. And you learn all about the history of the prison, the numerous escape attempts, and the life on the island. So for the folks who work there, the guards and everyone else, they actually had a community. They had a school. People live there.
Yeah.
In addition to the prison population. It's very interesting. Highly recommend it.
One thing I find really interesting about Alcatraz is most tourist destinations, whoever puts it together, the information about it, they know how to treat it. Who are the good guys, who are the bad guys? And any sort of growing up in Massachusetts, Revolutionary War sites, the good guys were the Americans, the colonists, and the bad guys were the British. And when you go to Alcatraz, it's almost like they don't know 100% how to treat it, because there's recognition that these were really bad guys who were being locked up in Alcatraz, the worst of the worst. But there's also recognition that what we were doing to them there was horrific. And when the guys with the stories about people trying to break out, and there was one escape attempt where a guard, or more than one guard, was killed, and some of the inmates were killed, and they act as though they shouldn't have done this, but at the same time, you're there, you're walking around, you're listening to the headphones, and you're like, I don't want to get the fuck out of here too. It would drive you crazy. Yeah. You can see right across the bay, you can see San Francisco, and you can see it's like right there, so tantalizing, freedom. And then you've got this ice cold bay full of sharks, in between you, even if you can get to the bay at all. So
it's not the sharks; it's the hypothermia, yeah. And it's the sheer distance, the undercurrents. It's just no way you can make it. I don't think Olympic swimmers can make it from Alcatraz.
I think people do. People may, yeah,
really?
Yeah, they can do it. But
not me. I'm a bad swimmer.
Anyway, so that's a little San Francisco arcana for you. I have a couple of other items I wanted to get to. I want to thank Aaron Wysocki, the commander of the armies of the East, for being with us last week. And there was some question about, in the comments about, hey, Aaron, how come you're not on more often? People need to understand, he lives in Pittsburgh and does not come out here very often.
That's an easy one to answer.
So, and I also do not live in LA area. I live in the Bay Area myself, so I come down usually every couple of weeks to do these. So that's why I'm not on Aggressive Progressives very often or whatever other show I might be on. You know, people saying, oh, Malcolm, you should be on the main show. I'm not here, even if they wanted me to, which I don't think there's much interest. Anyway, so I thought I'd clear that up. Another idea I wanted to shoot by you guys is, and I haven't mentioned this to you, but I got an email about the artist Grammatic, who's electronic music, very popular, and he has issued his own form of like Bitcoin type money, like Grammatic bucks or something like that, where people can buy them, and I'm not sure if they can use them to purchase like his merchandise or what, but he's got like over $2 million of fans just giving him money for these worthless, otherwise worthless. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be awesome if TYT issued like TYT bucks or something where, and I'm not sure if we would, we would have people be able to mine them or we just have a limited number. It's very complicated how you would figure that out. But that would be like a reward for people, potentially our fans and members and so on and so forth. And they could, compete to compile TYT bucks and maybe use them to redeem for sweatshirts or hats or things like that. So if you guys know about blockchain technology, I think that's a reasonable or a possible idea. I'd like to hear in the comments section about that. All right, two more things. Aaron and I, we didn't talk about it last week, but we have also discussed the possibility of doing a TYT book club where once a month, once every 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever, we read a book and have the membership read a book and we sit down and talk about it. I don't know when we'd shoot it or how we do it or whatever, what the logistics would be. But if that's something that you guys would have an interest in, then maybe we do political books, maybe we do fiction, I don't know. But if that's something you guys would take an interest in, we can be, TYT can become like Oprah and
that
have a book club.
Awesome.
And last thing is the holidays are coming. They're right around the corner. And what better gift for that progressive-minded but maybe penny-pinching friend on your holiday shopping list than a TYT membership, right? I don't know if we have the capacity to offer discounts or anything like that. Can you buy gift memberships?
Not really.
Well, but if you say to somebody, here, I'm going to buy you a gift.
I thought you were going to plug merchandise, which you can buy.
Well, that too. But I'm more interested in membership right now because that will build. We're holding steady at 19, but we could shoot up to 25 or 30.
If you guys want to watch some professional plugging of merchandise,
that's right.
You guys have to watch this week's episode of Old School, where you had four professionals. Maybe three professionals and one hack.
Two and a half professionals.
Yeah. Plug the shoptyt.com. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and it's like the way you open the show with, too.
Yeah.
It's like we're going to open the show with the four of us reading scripted promos for 20 minutes, and it's very entertaining.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a genius move on my part to go down that path because, one, we're plugging it, but two, it's fun. It was a fun way
it's
to
also,
plug it.
I think, the kind of thing people don't think about, that it's a real skill. Doing that sort of announcing that Mark Thompson does, and what Ben does.
So what happened is right before we went on, Tim Collins asked me to read that little promo. I was like, sure, great. How hard can it be to read a promo? Well, it's harder than it seems, right? You have to not stutter. You have to read it just the right way. You have to emphasize a certain information that's in there, like the dates and the URLs. And it's easy to kind of screw it up a little bit.
And yeah, when you're
Mark
reading
Thompson
that, you have
fantastic.
To you have to overemphasize words. I learned this doing TYT 140. I remember the first one I did. You were like, "Oh my god, that was the worst monotone ever." But I didn't want to sound like a newscaster, and I realized, no, you have to sound like a newscaster. You have to overemphasize things, underemphasize other things, really go up and down to tell people how they're supposed to be perceiving the information that you're giving them. So it's old school. This week's old school is entertaining in general, but that was a good way to start. That's all the stuff that I wanted to get to. But TYT membership should be a gift idea because the greatest gifts are gifts that people will enjoy, but they're not willing to get for themselves for whatever
Definitely.
Reason. And I think TYT membership fits in that category, and we can figure it out how we can get gift memberships, can't we?
No, not possible.
Impossible.
We can send a chimpanzee to the moon. We can't send my cock to Uranus, and we can't. We can't sell gift memberships.
That's a little throwback to a couple of months ago, Steve's favorite story about a macaque who was was the one who took the photo, Pulitzer Prize winning photo or whatever. So we're gonna start with the one of my favorite segments, that we all love from Dave Kohler. It's called Letter Rip. Do we have? I think we have an opening of some sort for it, but I'm not sure if I told Irma to get it ready, so she may not have it ready. But so who do you got for us, Dave?
So I'm trying to try my best here. I have a professor of economy at Princeton. His name is Uwe Reinhardt. Uwe, Americans probably would pronounce it Uwe or Uwe, U-W-E.
There he is.
Uwe Reinhardt was a distinguished professor of economics at Princeton. He focused on healthcare, and he was one of the leading academics who studied how to improve healthcare systems, and he leaned in the direction of universal coverage and how it can bring down costs and eliminating administrative waste and mandates so that everybody be covered. And he was very influential in government policy for the past many decades, and a lot of his ideas are the ones that ended up in the Affordable Care Act. He actually won a medal of the highest medal offered by the government of Taiwan for designing their single-payer system over there. So I like that. So this Taiwan says, what are we going to do? How are we going to get a healthcare system? Let's get a professor who knows this thing called and have him design it for us, and then we'll implement it and give him a medal of, the top medal our country offers. It'd be nice if we could do something, at least something like that.
Whereas we took the Heritage Foundation's
right.
Health plan.
Foundation Health Plan has some reasonable ideas, maybe more or less, that maybe they were distorted, but they came in part from this guy's work. Although I think his research is kind of obvious, to tell you the truth. He might be a distinguished professor at Princeton, but yeah, of course everyone has to be covered and you got to reduce administrative costs.
Yeah, but by not having a bunch of different insurance companies that reduces administrative costs. I mean, obviously, because we know we have Medicare in this country, so we know that that works.
Right. So he was a lot of my obits always seem to have some connection to the World War II era. They always run through there somehow. This guy was a child. He was born in Germany. He was a child during World War II. So he's guilt-free of any association with Nazis, but he was old enough to remember the war and the violence and the brutality of the soldiers. So when he became, or the SS or whoever he observed, when he became older and had to serve in the German army, he said, fuck, no way. I'm not going to go and salute some of the people who were responsible for the Nazi era in World War II. So he left Germany and went to Canada. And who knows if these stories are ever true or they're missing a component, but he had $90 in his pocket.
Canadian.
I don't know. And with that, he got a bunch of odd jobs, parking cars, a lot of unskilled labor until he could get himself into school. And he went to college somewhere in Canada. And then went to Yale for graduate school, and then his career moved on from there. But first of all, man, if I got stuck down to my last $90 and were sent to another country, how the hell do these people do this? And who's the rags to riches guy? Nelson.
Horatio Alger.
Horatio Alger, yeah.
Did you hear what I just said? It's like Mandela.
Mandela's dead.
Saddam killed them all. It's an old reference.
Yeah. But on the other hand, maybe he had $90 in his pocket, but maybe his parents in Germany were bankrolling. Who knows? It's a great
$90 story. Back in 1948 or whatever was a lot more than it is now.
That's true.
You could buy a used car for $90 back then.
Anyway, so this guy falls.
We came with $20 in 77.
Yeah. No, it's
what choice
your family
do you have?
Too.
Yeah. Wait, you're just gonna,
I know, right.
You're gonna go just, stick your head in an oven? I mean, what choice? You make do.
Most of those people were gonna have their.
That's a good point.
Someone stick their head in the oven for them. Sadly, he's not Jewish. So that's it. That's the story. I like to highlight these biographies of people who had some influence, but most of the world doesn't know about them.
I read something where it said that he, after the financial crisis, he said, obviously all economists, we don't know what we're talking about, so I'm not going to teach economics anymore because we're full of shit. I'm going to start teaching Korean folktales or Korean singing or something like that. I'm not sure if he ever actually did teach it, but he was quite the jokester.
Bernie Sanders acknowledges him as a leading thought leader on healthcare issues.
And more importantly, he trended on Twitter very briefly.
Really?
I saw that and I thought, I didn't know who he was and I looked him up. But he was just the last one and then disappeared and that was the end of it.
Wow.
You know.
Maybe this segment will vault
him. Yeah, right.
Back
he's going to
19 people will retweet it. Uwe Reinhardt.
so we can move on.
I can't even get the Roy Moore child molester to be to trend again, despite my best efforts. Some of you have been monitoring on Twitter. All right, so let's move on to the main event, which is, of course, Weekly World News. Weekly World News. It's good. I mean, I'm surprised they don't play it 4 or 5 times. Thank you, Irma. Irma, I'm sorry I threw you a curve there. We were supposed to do Steve's vacation photos next, but he said, screw it, we'll do them later. So we're doing Weekly World News. And those of you who are fans of the Friday postgame know how this works. I scan the globe. I cull the interesting stories, not necessarily the most important stories, but 5 interesting stories from around the world, not in the United States. And I put them in a little quiz format for Dave and Steve to see if they can guess what the real story is and not the phony ones that I come up with. And let's just go to our first country, which I believe is Zimbabwe. I think everyone
knows. They
had
an incident there this
week. Well, that's huge in the news.
Yeah, just hang on a second. Jesus. So a funny little story. You can come back to me, Irma. A quick funny little story about this is that Steve and I were driving in his car last night, and as we got in, he had NPR on, and they started talking about this story. And I was like, shit, I gotta start talking to Steve about something to make him turn off the radio. So I started talking about it because I knew that it was going to be in today's Weekly World News and didn't want the answer to be given away. And you're welcome, Dave. I don't want to give it, Steve any.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
But I'm not just going to ask what happened. Well, we'll get to it. All right, so here's the question. What's the question? Out. Question is, Zimbabwe's recent coup was sparked after 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe's attempted, Robert Mugabe's attempts to install whom as his designated successor. Was it A, his wife, B, his grandson, C, his attorney, or D, his border collie?
This is by far the least obscure worthy of this story of all time.
It's the easiest question of all time on this show.
Yeah.
Okay, are you complaining?
Yes. It's a good thing you made me turn off the radio yesterday. Jeez, otherwise I would have nailed this one.
Well, I wasn't sure. Okay, so what's the correct answer, Irma? It is A, his wife. That's correct. So I'm sorry it was too easy. I wasn't sure whether, I knew people knew about the coup for the most part, but whether people knew that it was because of his much, much younger wife that he wanted her to become president after him. Well, thank you. You're welcome for the easy answer. And you guys at home too. So here's the story. I think we have an image of Mugabe here at some point. So the army detained Robert Mugabe and his wife on Tuesday or Wednesday. And then it's been sort of up in the air what's going to happen. There he is with his wife. So the military placed him under house arrest. There hasn't been, it's not like a coup, traditional coup. There was a lot of fighting in the streets, and this was, it's described as like
it's a gentleman's coup.
A bloodless correction is what the military are calling it. So it's been relatively peaceful. I think we have some text graphics. The first one is here from the New York Times. Many in this country of 16 million people have known no president other than the 93-year-old Mr. Mugabe, a one-time leader of the country's anti-colonial struggle, who traded the liberator's mantle for the iron fist of one of Africa's most enduring autocrats. So he's been in power pretty much nonstop since 1980. And he's 93 years old, and there was question about the succession. But now it's unclear what's going to happen.
The crazy thing is, until 1980, or shortly before then, England or Great Britain was still like, this territory in Africa, it's ours.
Well, it was Rhodesia.
Rhodesia, it's ours. Yeah.
But
it's ours. That's weird, no?
Yeah, well, you look back, a lot of the African countries, their independence is relatively recent.
Yeah, but
recent.
The 60s.
So yeah, but that's still
1980 is really late.
Well, they're working their way down the continent. But there are still parts of like Western Sahara, parts of Africa that are not independent still.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So. And
independence has worked out really well for a lot of those countries.
Yeah, if you're George Will, you argue that colonialism was a real boon to these places. So, all right. So, what else do we have to say about this story? So, we go to the next text graphic, Irma. On Monday, the army commander who was responsible for the coup, made an unprecedented statement criticizing Mugabe for pushing aside veterans of the Liberation War. The following day, the ruling party condemned the army leader for treasonable conduct, and that evening, the army sent armored personnel carriers into Harare and seized control of the state broadcaster and other strategic points, including Mugabe's residence. So what's going on here is that his wife is a part of this group called the G40. They're cabinet ministers and officials in their 40s and 50s who were too young to remember the country's fight for independence, which Robert Mugabe was instrumental in. And there's this power struggle going on between them. And Mugabe was perceived as bypassing all of these former fighters and people who were part of that struggle in favor of these younger people, and including his wife.
There's a lot of interesting nuance here too.
And his vice president.
Yeah.
Let me go to the next graphic, Irma. The most frequently mentioned potential successor is Emmerson Mnangagwa, a close Mugabe ally for decades until Mr. Mugabe dismissed him as vice president. That action prompted Mr. Mnangagwa to flee to South Africa last week, and it was not clear whether he had since returned to Zimbabwe. Another issue is the future of Mrs. Mugabe, whom Mr. Mugabe had seemed to promote over Mr. Mnangagwa, precipitating the current crisis. And then just go to the last one, so we have one more, and then I'll let Steve chime in. The 52-year-old First Lady is unpopular among many Zimbabweans for her lavish spending on mansions, cars, and jewels. Last month, she went to court to sue a diamond dealer for not supplying her with the 100-carat diamond that she said she had paid for. And I have that problem with a lot of my diamond dealers when I order my 100-carat diamonds. So that's what the situation is. It seems like the power struggle. And then the army is siding with Mr. Mnangagwa and the more, the old guard.
Couple of points. First of all, what is underappreciated and underrated is your pronunciation of African names. Excellent, excellent work. Like you need more plaudits for that.
Sure.
Secondly, wow, people, it doesn't matter who they are, where they live, how old they are, they just really lack judgment. Why in the world, as a first lady of a poor nation, would you have a 100-carat diamond ring? I mean, or a diamond, 100-carat diamond, anything, right? That's insanity. And why does she want to hold on to power? That's people don't know when it's time to go. Her husband is 93. They think he has dementia, or at least early beginnings of dementia. And there's going to be a power struggle. If you're one of the people struggling for power, there's a chance that you might get killed or very significantly, injured in many ways.
Or in prison. Yeah. There's a real downside.
Okay, so if you're Mugabe's wife, you say, I love Zimbabwe. And I want the future of Zimbabwe to be as bright as possible. That is why we realize that our time is over and we're stepping aside. And we gladly hand over the reins to this new leader, whoever it may, Mr. Say the name.
No, I don't remember it.
All the plot is taken away.
No, it's when I read it. I don't memorize it.
Mnangagwa.
Mnangagwa, yes.
Yeah. So whether it's him or somebody else, just turn it over and move on with your lives. And then you can have a lot of this lavish stuff that you want anyway, behind the scenes, out of scrutiny. You can move to Beverly Hills if you want. It's great. Okay. These dictators, they hang on too long. And then their wives and sons and daughters, they all hang on too long too. Move on.
Well, Dave, do you have any thoughts on this? Because
go ahead.
I think that it's understandable in many ways why the dictators want to do this. Not only hang on, but set up their succession. Because after they die, and we see this here in the United States, or whenever a high-profile political figure dies, immediately after someone dies, that's when the narrative is set of their rule and how they will be remembered in history books. And I think once you get to a certain age, that's what you really care about. It's not so much I want to, my wife to carry on my policies, but I want to make sure that it's someone I trust, who I put in power, who's going to be deciding what goes in the books, the textbooks that the kids read in the schools. And so,
if that's your goal, then it's even more reason to just leave, right? If you're clinging on and promoting people who don't quite deserve it and that country doesn't like it, well, that only hurts your legacy. You hand over the reins of power in a peaceful manner, the way we do here in the US for the most part, and that's the best way forward for your own legacy. And then if the next guy after you that you didn't pick, the people picked him, if that person sucks, well, that just makes you look even better. Okay? If that person's good, that means you had a peaceful and successful transfer of power. So you win either way. It's really short-sighted.
But one thing we also have in this country is when a new leader comes in, he typically blames everything that goes wrong on the previous guy.
That's fine.
And tries to establish that as the reason why. So I mean, of course you're right. I mean, there's no question. But I guess I find it a little bit
Malcolm says that phrase quite often to me. Of course you're right.
Totally true. Yeah. Totally true. But it's, you know, they're not thinking logically. They're not thinking in these terms. They're so, I mean, they've been in power so long, they don't know what it's like not to be.
That's the problem. They're out of touch.
Yeah. So all right, let's move on to the next question, which comes to us from Peru. And we know where Peru is. They're going to the World Cup. They beat New Zealand.
And Italy is not.
And Italy is not, nor is the United States. So Peru, it's a rising power.
Chile is not.
Chile is not.
It's not exactly on the level of Italy. But
Chile's pretty good. But all right, the question is, a Peruvian farmer is suing German energy giant RWE for what? Is it A, contributing to climate change, B, illegally fracking on his land, C, poisoning the Yavari-Mirim River, or D, masturbating in front of him?
Into a potted plant.
Into a potted plant. A lot of people don't get that reference. I keep making these jokes about people beating off into potted plants. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, how can you
I could never see a potted plant the same way as before.
I'm regretting buying those potted plants from Harvey Weinstein's garage sale.
Can I see those again?
Yes, can we see them again, please, Irma? The options are A, contributing to climate change. This is a Peruvian farmer suing German energy giant RWE for what? It's the number two energy producer in Germany, if that helps. Contributing to climate change, illegally fracking on his land, C, poisoning the Yavari-Mirim River, or D, masturbating in front of him. We have our answers, gentlemen?
I'm going to try this.
Okay, we have
go with an the answer obvious
of A
one,
and an answer of C. What is the correct answer, Irma? It is
C?
A, contributing to climate change.
Wow.
Dave, 2-2.
You went straight on this one.
That one seemed too boring and straightforward.
Yeah. I'm real tricky. And now, by the way, I completely randomize what the answers, the letter, so I don't pick it. I randomize it. So it could be all B, all C, not obviously not all D, but anyway. Okay, so the gentleman's name is Saul Luciano Liuya, and he's a Peruvian farmer who won a legal victory, there he is, on Monday when a German court said his appeal against energy giant RWE, which he accuses of contributing to climate change that is threatening his Andean home, had merit. He had sued earlier in a lower court, and the court threw it out. He appealed, and now the higher court says, yeah, you can go forward. We have a text graphic, I believe, here. Luciano argues that RWE, as one of the world's top emitters of climate-altering carbon dioxide, must share in the cost of protecting his homeland, Juarez, from a swollen glacier lake at risk of overflowing from melting snow and ice. So the both sides have until November 30th to make their case before the court will decide on the next steps. It's not a Friday post game if Dave doesn't get a call. Yeah,
or someone.
You were trying to phone a friend or have a friend phone you to give you the answers, Dave? So, of course, the energy giant RWE believes that there is, it's a meritless case. Why are you singling us out? But it looks like the case will proceed to the hearing evidence stage. We have another text graphic, Irma, please. Luciano, who is also a mountain guide, was all smiles as he left the court building. German media have likened his fight against RWE to a David versus Goliath battle. I would like to return home to the mountains and tell the people that I was able to do something for them, the father of two told reporters ahead of Monday's hearing. And so he wants RWE to pay him $20,000 for flood defenses for the whole community. Well, not him, but pay for that. And then reimburse him for 6,000 plus euros that he spent on protective measures himself. And his claim that against this energy giant that they are causing climate change is based on a 2013 study that found that RWE was responsible for 0.5% of global emissions since the beginning of industrialization. RWE is like, why are you singling us out? And they note that the company has made a lot of efforts to be more environmentally friendly. They've modernized their coal power plants to reduce CO2 emissions, and they've invested billions in renewable energy. But his lawyer, Rhoda Verheyen, I don't know if you saw that already. She believes that her client could be setting a precedent for so-called climate justice cases. So my question to you, gentlemen, is: do you think this is legit that someone should be able to sue an energy company because you can't pinpoint this glacier is melting because of something you did, but you contributed to it?
No, I think it's legit. But it's a $20,000 lawsuit. Why don't they pay and attribute it to marketing?
Well, the precedent
of what?
of them paying out when people
you
sue them.
The next one will be $20 billion penalty.
Well, who can, I mean, how many towns? Yeah, it's not that much money, but if they're going on record as saying they're on the hook for paying for the cost, I mean, then if I lost my home in in the hurricane in Texas, can I sue them also? I mean, it seems like it opens the floodgates, so to speak, for this type of thing, and it'll be interesting to see if it goes forward.
I want it to go forward. That's a valid way. Hey, it's better than violence and war or taking someone kidnapping or
and
hostage.
Also, if it has a chilling effect on these companies that they have to, like they're going to be sued so much that they're out to go out of business if they don't do something to stop climate change, then that's a positive.
Is John
step.
Edwards this guy's lawyer?
Well, look,
the psychic.
I totally agree that the suit should go forward, but as with anything in life, you have to prove a couple of things: to prove causation and to prove damages. So he had to prove that this company contributed to global warming, and then there's a proportionality argument, right? Yeah. Did they contribute 2% to it, 90% to it, whatever, right? So then the guy has to figure out what his damages are. Let's say his damages are $100, and if 100% of damage is from global warming, and this German company contributed 5% to it, then they should pay 5% of the 100% of the $100. So there's a way to do this in a way that makes sense. Now the burden's on the proof of the plaintiff. So maybe this lawsuit doesn't open the floodgates because maybe at the end of the day he wins $5.
Right. But if you're establishing that this 2013 study is legitimate and it does point to 5% or 0.5% of climate change is caused by, well, then next he, what's to say he doesn't sue ExxonMobil or BP or, you know, and they all.
Yeah, I mean, that will be a class action.
Yeah. At some point, you know, to make it more efficient for the court system, they might require all these legal terms called joinders and form a class and all this kind of stuff and do it that way. Great.
But can you imagine this in an American court? I mean, this would never in a million years go anywhere in an American court.
That's right.
we don't understand the German legal system to the extent to how what's different about the way they do things than we do things. But just in general, money doesn't talk in Germany as much as it does here.
This isn't a German legal system? I missed that.
It's a German company. He's suing them in Germany.
Oh. Yeah, typically you have to sue the defendant in their area of jurisdiction. You can't sue them where you live, and then they can come to defend it where you live.
But that means there's going to be a lot of lawsuits in the Bahamas or wherever all these American corporations are.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Maybe there should be. So, all right, let's move on to the next question, which comes to us from where? I don't know. I don't remember. It's from India. There's India.
A big place.
We've covered India a fair amount recently. And so the question is,
it's about the pollution in Delhi?
It's not. The question is, in anticipation of a visit from Ivanka Trump, the Indian city of Hyderabad is doing what? Is it A, rounding up beggars, B, euthanizing packs of urban dwelling monkeys, C, painting T's on the city's most prominent buildings, or D, filling all the city government's positions of power with the Indian president's dangerously unqualified children? Sort of a tribute, that'd be like a tribute to Ivanka. What is the answer? I'm not sure I remember the answer myself. All right, we have our answers.
Rounding up beggars.
He says rounding up. Dave says A.
I say B.
Steve says B. What's the correct answer, Irma?
I'm not guessing. I know this one.
It is A, rounding up beggars. Dave's been doing his, what are you, like Hannah Cranston, doing research and actually studying international news? That's cheating. I consider that cheating. Do you consider that cheating? Okay, so
all
right, Hyderabad.
First of all, I object to the boring answers. Come on. Rounding up beggars, really?
But that's the answer.
I know it's the answer, but it's the obvious answer. It's so boring. Come on. Euthanizing urban dwelling monkeys, that's super interesting.
Yes.
That should have been the answer.
Right, but I don't, you know, I don't get to determine what the story is. You know.
Climate change, beggars, this is boring.
Boring shit. Boring. All right. Just wait. So.
totally true, totally bullshit. This game has gotten boring.
Okay.
I don't think it's boring. Keep going.
So more than 200 beggars have been transported to separate male and female shelter homes located on the grounds of two city prisons in Hyderabad, which is in southern India. The city has a begging ban, which it turns out begging is illegal. Street begging is illegal everywhere in India. I'm not sure it's enforced really strictly, but here's the facility where they've been brought. And Irma showed a picture of a street beggar in Hyderabad earlier, and. It's punishable by as much as 10 years in prison, although the law is rarely enforced. So Ivanka Trump is coming. She's going to be a featured speaker at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Hyderabad, which will also be attended by the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi. And we have a text graphic for you. The beggars have been rounded up from traffic junctions, bus stations, and railway stations and transported by van to the shelters, where they often find themselves separated from their family members. They are being offered clean clothes, a shower, and a bed, but they're also being fingerprinted before they're allowed to leave and told they could face jail time if they are found begging again. So basically, they just have to hold, bide their time until Ivanka is gone, and then they can do it again, clearly. One civil rights group that runs two shelters in Hyderabad estimates the city has 13,000 beggars, so the 200 have been rounded up. That's like dropping the begging bucket. Dropping the bucket would be appropriate for a begging story. Mm-hmm. And so we have one last text drop I thought was interesting. Next month, after Ivanka Trump has left, police will start offering cash rewards to people who inform them of a beggar's location. Police have set up a control room to receive the information. So I find that fascinating. These are people who are begging for money. The city will give people money for ratting them out. So if you are too...
I don't even get it. Excuse me, police officer, there's a beggar right there.
Yeah.
Give me some money? Is that how it works? That's ridiculous.
Maybe they're not doing a whole lot of foot patrolling in the streets of Hyderabad. But it is like, why not just turn each other in and take the money?
Yeah.
I'm sure if you want money, there's money available. I'm sure it's more complicated than that. But I've never been to India. You guys, either of you been to India?
Never been.
No, I should have gone a couple years ago when my friend got married there. He's a rich guy living a lavish lifestyle. We should have gone.
Is this the our coworker?
No,
they didn't get married in India.
No,
yeah.
No.
I know she posted Facebook images from her wedding, and she's
that
fully
was in
dressed.
Battery Park, New York.
But she looks like she could have been in Hyderabad or wherever they're from. I've never been there, so I don't know. But my understanding is that the begging situation in Indian cities is worse than anything we could imagine.
There we go.
Yeah. Come on, pay attention. And this is obviously not going to be a solution, but this sort of Potemkin stuff that cities do it here in the United States, and even like my high school does it when it's alumni day, they dress it up really nicely, to make it look good for alumni to give money, and colleges do it.
They did that in Dachau. They did.
Yeah.
And I'll get to that later.
Yeah. Ooh. That's a little... A little teased for later. We're gonna come back to Steve's vacation photos. So let's keep going so we can get through this because it's become tedious to Steve. We're going to Kazakhstan next, and that's where Kazakhstan is, which was like just one of the Soviet socialist republics that nobody paid much attention to in the West and didn't really distinguish. And then when the Soviet Union broke up, it became one of the largest countries in the world geographically. So the question in Kazakhstan is this. Six Czech tourists visiting Kazakhstan were recently issued citations for doing what? Was it A, drunkenly urinating on the base of the Kazakh military hero Sagadat Nurmagomedov's statue? B, smuggling an illicit brand of chewing tobacco into the country? C, trying to take a photo in public after stripping down to just Borat-style sling swimsuits? Or D, coming from a country with a more outlandishly spelled name than Kazakhstan? Is this easy? Is this boring?
No, it's not boring because you pronounce that name really beautifully.
Don't ask me to do it again. I'll tell you my secret when we're done with the game. All right, we have an answer of B and an answer of C. What is the correct answer,
Irma? Borat answer.
C, trying to take a photo in public after stripping down to just Borat's
fire today.
Yeah, Davis, 4-4. Did you know this one?
Did not know this one.
4-4.
4-4. Yeah. Excellent work.
Very good.
That's a good answer.
Okay. Well, it's a wacky story, but I can't do all wacky stories. I like to do some serious stories. So we go to Kazakhstan. These are Czech tourists. When we have an image of them, first we have Borat. Let's see if you don't know what the
God, that is. A crime against humanity.
Also known as the mankini, which I don't understand because a bikini has two, whatever. But it's a mankini or a sling style swimsuit, and it was popularized in the 2005 film Borat. But these six Czech tourists, they stripped down and were getting ready to take their photo. But the authorities stepped in. They want to take a picture in front of that says I Heart Astana, which is the capital of Kazakhstan. The police stepped in and they detained them and fined them $68 each for committing an act of minor hooliganism. We of course know. I'm sorry, 2006 movie Borat, Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. Obviously, Sasha Cohen was not from Kazakhstan, and the film offended many Kazakhs by portraying the country as backward and degenerate. And what I want to ask you guys about this story is, should Kazakhstan, I mean, they were pissed. They really didn't like it, and they weren't giving anybody a high five over that movie, because nobody's ever heard of Kazakhstan. Now it's the only thing people know about Kazakhstan. But should they get a sense of humor and yes, embrace this?
They should embrace it wholeheartedly.
You think that's they're going the whole wrong direction?
They're completely. It's like the Mormon Church and their embracing of Book of Mormon. The musical is a mockery of the religion.
Yeah.
And what they did was they just took out an ad in the what is that called? The little flyer,
playbill.
Just that says, you know, hey, you can learn more about the Mormon religion. Please contact us. That's great. Use it as an advantage. Getting upset about the movie makes you only seem like a sore loser, like this is all true.
Yeah.
Just laugh along with it, and they should make that the official movie of Kazakhstan. Or they should say, or they should have sponsored the movie and said, go to Kazakhstan.com for information on tourism to Kazakhstan. Like, they should totally take advantage of it, not get angry about it.
Yeah, I agree, because that's why people are going there. You think these guys were going to come from Czech Republic, were going to thinking, let's go to Kazakhstan because of the great beaches or whatever? That was like, clearly, they all had their sling, their green sling suits. That was the one thing they wanted to do when
they're
they
fans
there.
Of Borat, they dressed like him and went to Kazakhstan. That's great.
I mean, and you know, you could have a Borat lookalike who is just there to take photos in his, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they could do it. And it's not like, you know, Kazakhstan is on the top of everybody's agenda, and they're doing great in all other ways. And this is, you know, this is the one thing they need to worry about.
If not for this movie, they'd be so much better off,
yeah,
right?
And so, what do you think, Dave? Are you on the Kazakh side, and that it's their tradition? But I mean, admittedly, they have a very macho tradition in there, and Borat is you know, the opposite of that in so many ways.
Yes, it's the obvious response. Oh, you're making fun of us and insulting us. We don't want that. But they got to think just one step beyond that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our next question comes to us. It's in the same vein, so to speak. But it's from Australia. My usual map supplier did not have one of Australia, so we got this one. But everyone knows where Australia is anyway, right? It's right just south of Indonesia. And the question is, based on popular demand, what name did Sydney give to the newest ferry operating in Sydney Harbor? Was it A, the Harbor Master Boater, B, Ferry McFerry Face, C, the Aussie Osborne, or D, the Dingle Ferry?
Oh, this is an excellent question. I mean, answers.
I don't
love it.
There might be hidden jokes or references in here that I don't get, which you have to explain afterwards.
Aussie Osborne, you get that, right?
Okay, now I do.
Oh my God.
Master Boater?
You don't get Master Boater?
Yeah, I get that one.
Ferry McFerry Face, you don't know what that is? We'll get into it.
But I need to see those.
The Dingle Ferry, you get the Dingle Ferry?
That's the Seinfeld
Dingle? No.
Then I don't get that.
It rhymes with Dingleberry. You know what a dingleberry is?
Not really. I've heard of it.
That's a no. If you don't know, not really is a no. Dingleberry is a small.
It's a delicious fruit. You should try it.
Small piece of shit that is, you know, remains in your rectal area. That, you know, for whatever reason.
It's basically poor hygiene. Oh, poor hygiene results in dingleberry.
This is how I'm choosing.
All right, what are our answers? We have an answer of C from Steve and an answer of A from Dave. I hope I didn't mess this
up.
I have
the luxury of
C is an excellent name. I hope that's
What's the correct answer? B, Ferry McFerry Face.
Were you
one for five?
Yeah, I'm one for five.
Okay.
Back to my old ways.
You can take the Steve out of, that doesn't make any sense. All right, so You don't know what this is a reference to, do you?
No.
I'm sure a lot of our audience knows this, but last year or a couple years ago, Great Britain in England, they had a contest to name a new polar exploring ship. And the winning answer was Bodie McBoatface. It was a popular poll, whoever was holding the survey or naming the ship said no, we're not going to do that. But they did give that name to a submarine, a submersible vessel that would go with the polar vessel. They named the polar vessel Sir David Attenborough. So, but then now Australia wanted to name, or the Sydney siders are going to name their new ferry. We have an image of what a Sydney ferry looks like. This is not Ferry McFerryface. And Bodie McBoatface won this contest also. But Bodie McBoatface is also the name of this submersible. So they went with the number two answer or vote getter, which was Ferry McFerryface. And that's we have a text graphic for this one also. Given Bodie was already taken by another vessel, we've gone with the next most popular name nominated by Sydney siders, New South Wales Minister for Transport and Infrastructure Andrew Constance said in a statement Tuesday. Ferry McFerryface will be the harbor's newest icon, and I hope it brings a smile to the faces of visitors and locals alike, he added. So they had 15,000 votes, and this was second. And this is an example of, I think, what Kazakhstan's not doing. Yeah. And what the British didn't do was, what the hell? People want to call the boat Bodie McBoatface. They want to call it Ferry McFerryface. Great. Now people are going to want to take that ferry. They're going to want to get their photo taken on the ferry and all that stuff. And it's going to, and have a little sense of whimsy, for crying out loud.
I really liked Ozzy Osbourne. And I want to give you kudos for thinking of that great name.
Thank you.
The Master Boater was juvenile, but that's not bad. Not bad. But Ozzy Osbourne is excellent.
Okay. Dingle Ferry, the less said about that, the better.
And the lesson is you should always vote. Don't forget to vote.
Yeah, that's right. There's
don't let them disenfranchise you.
There's a Swedish express train called Trainy McTrainface. There's a Sydney racehorse named Horsey McHorseface. And this was started by some BBC radio host who. But anyway, so we applaud the Australian people and the government for being willing to have a little fun with something, and unlike the people of Kazakhstan. So before we go, we got to get to. Do you want to do your photos, or do you want to do a weekly? Totally true or totally bullshit. Which would you rather do? Because you can do your photos next time if you.
I don't care. Do what you guys. Yeah. Let's do the truth.
Totally true or totally true. Bullshit. All right. Well, is there? I think there's an opening. Is there an intro?
I don't think so. It's the greatest opening of all time.
Norma doesn't know about it if there is one.
Done that.
That's great. You called Irma Norma, and like you went five.
No, I was talking about Norma.
You went 4 for 5 on the quiz. You focused all your energy on the quiz, and then everything else is gone.
I know the difference between Norma and Irma, two totally separate human beings.
But there's also, we have a Bert and a Bart, which sometimes I worry that I'm going to get them wrong. But so let's do totally true, totally bullshit. The way we play is I posit some question. I make a positive statement, and then we here on the panel decide whether it's A, totally true, or B, totally bullshit. And the most important thing to remember is we don't do nuance until we do. So let's go to the first one, which there was discussion of this on the old school last night, but Roy Moore is going to stay in and will win the Alabama Senate race. Totally true or totally bullshit? I put it to you, Dave Kohler.
Totally true. Seems like the worst is out there, and the pressure is at its maximum, and he's in. So I think he'll survive. It's just, 2-3 weeks more?
And you think he will also win?
Well, yes.
Okay. All right, Steve?
Yeah, totally true. Roy Moore supporters just don't care. He has an R next to his name. He hates Jews. He hates Muslims. He loves Jesus. They're in.
He hates all the right people. Yeah, it's really interesting to see. I say yes too, so totally true also. So I guess it's not that controversial. But the precedent established by Donald Trump, we used to have this thing where the press would hit upon something like this, and then the politician would backpedal and be forced to resign. They'd be forced to resign. They have to. And Donald Trump was just like, I don't have to resign. But the Democrats, even under Obama, with Sherry Sherrod, Shirley Sherrod. As soon as the even the whiff of controversy about her saying something racialist, And you know, they called her up. She had to pull over, and you have to call and resign immediately.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And compared to what Donald Trump has done,
there's like tape, audio tape of him saying, "I grabbed him by the pussy."
Yeah.
And that was played repeatedly over a course of I don't know how many days. Didn't matter.
But it's been, I think, shocking for the press.
53% of white women voted for that man.
Yeah. They don't. This pressure was just phony. It was just artificial. It's like, you know, money. We only exchange money and believe that the dollar is worth something because we all agree we believe it. Mm-hmm. And once we stop believing that the dollar is worth a dollar, then it's over.
Yeah.
And so similarly, Donald Trump and Roy Moore are saying, I'm going to just deny.
Roy Moore supporters have not changed their mind on him. And now they're more intent on supporting him than ever before because they don't want Washington or the press to dictate to them who should or should not be running.
Yeah, the liberals.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, demanding and that Al Franken resign.
And I tweeted about this. There's something oddly creepy about religious fundamentalists really enjoying very young women for sex. Whether it's the fundamentalist Mormons or the Taliban, they think it's okay. You know, the arranged marriages, all that kind of stuff. So for them, females are really there for, you know, reproductive purposes and to serve the man. And they're okay with them, you know, as soon as they pass puberty to be on that path. So, yeah, there's some you know, discomfort, but not that bad. They don't think it's a fundamentally bad thing.
Well, I mean, the Bible is full of horrible things and mistreatment of women. So if you believe that the Bible is infallible, then you probably, and also there's also just this, they've been, a lot of people in this country have been fed a steady diet of Democrats are liars, the media is lying to you, so whatever they're saying to you, you can't believe it, so don't believe it.
Yeah.
And this fits in that. And so it's really convenient for them, anybody on the right, Donald Trump or anybody, to just say, oh no, it's fake news, it's lies, and then that fits into their narrative and that our understanding. So, all right, let's go to the second one, Irma, which I want to get. This is a time for humble pie. I don't know if you guys saw these. That's not it. I don't think that's it. The second totally true or totally bullshit. We got the results of the Virginia gubernatorial election wrong, but have a good excuse. Totally true or totally bullshit. Steve, you guys said Gillespie would win. Yeah. I actually said that he would lose, but it would be close. So we were all wrong, but you guys were wronger than I am. Do you have a good excuse? You're wrong, but you have a good excuse. Totally true or totally bullshit?
Totally bullshit. I have no good excuse. I just didn't know my stuff. Sorry.
Dave, what about you?
Totally true. The excuse was that we filmed the Friday postgame show on Tuesday that week. So how are we supposed to know? Or we filmed it on Monday, I think.
No, we filmed it on Tuesday, the day of the election.
The morning.
Are you saying that we would have done a better job if we had filmed it the next day?
Yes.
And when we already knew the results.
Then we would have gotten it right.
All right.
We would have been able to say.
I think the question said we have a good excuse, not a terrible excuse. But anyway, all right, before we go, let's go to the last one because that's the most topical because we are, as Dave alluded to, we are recording this on Thursday. We record on Thursday afternoon. So just this morning, the Al Franken news broke and we're not going to know what's happened in the intervening, 30 hours before you get to watch this or this weekend. So that's what this one is about. The last one I'm about Al Franken, if you could bring that one up, please. The question is, if those of us on the left are to be consistent, we need to insist that Al Franken resign his Senate seat immediately. And so totally true or totally bullshit. If we are to be consistent, we have to insist
resign. You can't think about that one? I don't have time to think of that.
I did send it to you.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll go to Steve. What do you think? If we're going to be consistent, Al Franken has to resign.
Yes, totally true.
But what are consistent with? You don't know what I thought about all the previous ones.
Generally speaking, the left has a policy now that anybody who's involved in these sorts of activities has got to go. I think that's been sort of semi-established. You want to talk about your personal internal consistency?
Question that assumption.
So there's a couple of things here. So one, I don't want to say it's an equivalency. It's a false equivalency. Unless there are other women who are coming forward, and so far I just heard of this one incident, I'm not putting him in the same category as Harvey Weinstein and Roy Moore, who were serial predators and preyed upon numerous victims. So, but the fact that it's a one-off doesn't make it, it doesn't excuse it, of course. I guess it's better than having more victims. But the problem that I have with Al Franken are twofold. One, yes, if the allegation is true and he stuck his tongue in that woman's mouth, Wrong, wrong, wrong. That's sexual assault. Okay, that crosses the boundaries of sexual harassment. Like Louis C.K. to me was in violation of. I mean, he committed sexual harassment, not sexual assault. Those are totally different things for me. One is a civil matter, and one is a criminal matter. Sexual assault. You're touching someone. You are assaulting someone's body. So harassment to me is a lesser crime, much lesser. Anyway, back to Franken. That's terrible. But the thing that really bothered me was a picture where he has his hands like right near the woman's breast as she's sleeping, and he has a giant smile on his face, and he sent that out as if it's like a really funny thing to sexually exploit an unconscious person. And to me, that is really problematic for multiple reasons. One, it's a violation of her privacy. She never got consent from her that he could take the picture. He never got consent from her that he can post that picture. That's not a flattering picture of her. She's sleeping with her mouth half open or whatever it is, and she's obviously very tired. So you take a picture and you publicize it for your benefit, where she's the butt of the joke. Totally wrong. On top of that, he thinks it's funny to sexually assault someone. That's exactly the mindset that gives rise to behavior by like the Brock Turners of the world. So I'm not saying Al Franken is Brock Turner. Of course not. Those are two totally separate things. Like I said, one is harassment, one is assault, or rape in this case of Brock Turner. But that is really problematic for me. I think Al Franken should resign. I mean, you are contributing in a way that is a material harm to your society. It's bad for the victim. I forget her name, is it Tweeden?
Leanne Tweeden.
It's bad for her, obviously, but it's also a bad example to the rest of society. He's a senator, he's in a position of leadership, and it's terrible. And all he could say was that picture was not funny. No shit, it was not funny. It's not funny when people sexually exploit people that are unconscious.
All right, so you had time to think about it while Steve was rambling.
No,
but it's totally true or totally. Well, do you think Al Franken totally should resign?
No, I want to think about it more, but like, I'm not sure that's the right response or remedy to these situations. There should be protests again and whatever, but you did something in your past, whether it's criminal or civil or anything, or just immoral, but now you're a senator from Minnesota, so I don't know if that disqualifies you.
Well, I think it is, I'm going to say totally true that he really probably should resign. But I think it's also an opportunity for us to start laying down some.
Need some guidelines.
Right, some guidelines. What is acceptable, what's not acceptable for behavior, what you know you can be, what the punishment should be for various levels of sexual assault. And I think we also, and I don't know if this is possible, but what is it, like $25 million or $15 million, some big million-dollar figure has been paid out to people who have accused members of the House or Senate of sexual harassment over some period of years. Has just come out, but it's all, you know, no names are associated with or attached to it. I think that needs to come out. We need to know who these are, because if Al Franken is going to have to resign over this, then we should know who else is committing sexual assault or sexual harassment in the workplace in the United States Congress. The other thing that I think is interesting about the Al Franken situation that is related to Louis C.K. is, it's that is not part of the Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey or any of the others, is that it's couched in terms of it's a joke. So like when Louis C.K. would invite these women up to his room, his hotel room, and he would say, "Hey, can I you know whip it out and you know beat off in front of you?" They probably think, "Oh, he's joking." So you know he's a comedian. It's like not really a funny joke, but he's you know his comedy is sort of weird anyway. So maybe you know I'll laugh along, I'll play along. He's this big star, and I want to you know be in his good graces. So I'll laugh along, and then he starts to unzip, and they're like, "Oh wow, he's really taking this joke pretty far." And then he whips it out and starts jerking off, and they're like, "Now they're invested in it. Because they haven't stopped him." So they feel partially responsible for not saying no, that's disgusting. But at the same time, how are you going to say? And then he can just, you know, if they say no, he's like, "Of course, I'm just kidding. You know, I'm not really going to do that." So it puts them in an even more awkward position. And with Al Franken, when he's rehearsing a sketch with Leanne Tweeden to do in front of the troops, and he says, "Oh, we need to rehearse the kiss," and she's like, "No, we don't need to rehearse the kiss." He's like, "Yeah, we do." And he sticks his tongue down her throat. She can't say anything because then she's not. Like she's not appreciating that hey, we're just joking around here. Ha ha, that was funny. So it makes it all the more difficult for her. So that's something that I object to. And Al Franken, probably if you go back throughout his entire history, he's made a lot of jokes. You know, he just made a lot of jokes that were very funny, but he's made a lot that are not funny at all and are now, as he acknowledges in his you know, whatever his apology that he wrote, just not acceptable and in very poor taste. So, but I do think he probably should resign, so, which is hard to say. But I think we also need to establish some guidelines.
Replace him with Keith Ellison.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Surely, in the Senate and the House of Representatives, there are a whole bunch of men who were overly and crossed the line with some girl in college or whenever in their youth. And I don't mean, I'm not defending sexual assault or harassment. I mean, they did it.
Yeah.
They crossed the line. They did something with these. But those girls didn't say anything. For whatever reason, they're cool about it.
Yeah, they're not going to make a stink now.
Thick-skinned, whatever. So, but should they all go into their conscience and resign? Like Jimmy Carter, who said that he committed
adultery in his heart. Well, no, that's not.
Okay, never mind that. But sticking to the real hypothetical, which isn't so real. It's surely a lot of senators and congressmen.
Right, but it's also, we have a situation where the Democrats get punished and the Republicans don't. Because the Republicans are just like, no, didn't happen. I'm not going to own up to it. That photo was photoshopped, yeah, or whatever.
But I'm not talking about the politics. For the politics, Franken should definitely resign.
Yeah,
for the party.
But it's also, we're going to be in a situation where just Democrats have to resign, because it's like David Vitter didn't resign and Elliot Spitzer did.
Yeah.
Well, so. David Vitter found Jesus. Al Franken hasn't, so.
Well, David Vitter should, you know where Jesus is. Jesus is in prison. So that's where David Vitter should have gone, because he really wouldn't be able to find Jesus there. So, but more maybe just to go visit Roy Moore and find out, because he knows all about Jesus.
We should wrap it up.
Thanks, Bernie. All right, Bart. Thank you guys for watching at home. Appreciate it. We love you. We love our members. If you have suggestions for Totally True or Totally Bullshit for the future, but leave in the comments below. We love you guys. Have a great Thanksgiving. We appreciate your watching. And as always, stay strong.